This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it's going to be a wild and crazy day today here in Portland. 99 degrees, 103 tomorrow. It's getting nuts. This is climate change. We will be speaking in the second hour of our program today with Dr. Michael Mann, specifically about that very topic. One of the world's, literally one of the world's top climate scientists in our, I believe it's in our third hour. Spencer Ackerman will be here with, of course, how 9/11 and specifically George W. Bush's response to 9/11 is what set up the Trump presidency. And he's got a new book out about this called Reign of Terror, How the 9/11 Era Destabilized America Produced Trump. And I think it's absolutely spot on. There's a lot going on in the news that we will get to as we go through the day. I want to get into, are we all tired of giving a damn? This just a remarkable op-ed by a Michigan writer that I'll share with you a little later in this hour. But first, I want to talk about why conservatives want government to fail. Right? This is what we are seeing just writ large. I mean, just huge all over the place. The writing, the news, the right-wing news sites, or the newsletter that documents the right-wing websites and news from the New York Post. Don't buy the latest climate change alarmism. Well, it is taking down governments, right? Climate change took down the government of Tunisia, almost took down the government of Syria, took down the government of Libya, changed the government in Egypt. It's wrecking the governments in Central America. The Wall Street Journal, a climate of catastrophe. They're all pushing back on the IPCC report. And then, of course, the vaccine. Oh, let's make sure that, America still has a dysfunctional, that our hospitals are just jammed with people that they can't even deal with. And so here over at WorldNet Daily, welcome to 1938. First, they came for the unvaccinated. Right. Or it's all Joe Biden's fault. The American thinker, America is suffering from Biden's COVID recklessness at the border. But there's an actual reason why conservatives want government to fail everywhere. It's what I'm writing about in my piece today of the same title over at HartmanReport.com. There was this new study that just came out from the Peace Research Institute in Norway and the University of Aarhus. They polled 6,000 adults in the United States, Denmark, Italy, and Hungary, and they found that right across the board in these democratic nations, now Hungary is kind of the outlier here, but nonetheless, what they found was that the COVID pandemic has further eroded people's faith in democracy. Back in the 1960s, Pew has been doing these studies. The there's a whole bunch of different Pew. This is a Pew Research Center. They have been doing these studies since 1953. And what they found was back in the 60s, 80%+ of Americans said that they trusted government to do the right thing most of the time. The percentage today is 17%. How did that happen? How is it that we went from trusting our government to not trusting our government in 50 years? Well, it turns out there's an actual story here. Back in 1961, Rachel Carson published a book called Silent Spring about the death of birds as a result of the use of insecticides. And Ralph Nader in 1965 published a book called Unsafe at Any Speed, talking about how, the big automakers knew that their cars were designed in ways that would kill people. The steering wheels would go right through your chest. This could be fixed. The seatbelts were not mandatory. Seatbelts would save lives, all this kind of stuff. And they were fighting against seatbelts. And in response to this, Lewis Powell in 1971 wrote this infamous memo saying that business and very wealthy individuals needed to mobilize to stop this so-called assault on American business. In his memo, Lewis Powell said, and I quote, "Perhaps the single most effective antagonist of American business is Ralph Nader, who, thanks largely to the media, has become a legend in his own time and an idol of millions of Americans." And then he goes on to quote this article from Forbes magazine about Ralph Nader, quote, "The passion that rules in him, and he is a passionate man, is aimed at smashing utterly the target of his hatred, which is corporate power. He thinks and says quite bluntly that a great many corporate executives belong in prison for defrauding the consumer with shoddy merchandise, poisoning the food supply with chemical additives, and willfully manufacturing unsafe products that maim or kill the buyer. He emphasizes, and this is where Forbes got really freaked out, he emphasizes that he is not just talking about fly-by-night hucksters, but the top management of blue-chip businesses. Lewis Powell then in the next paragraph says, this is a frontal assault on our government, our system of justice, and the free enterprise system. And his solution? Big corporations and morbidly rich people need to fund a series of public policy think tanks. They need to create a filtering organization to help stack the courts with conservatives. They need to create right-wing media empires, particularly in news, in television, in radio, and in print. And they need to place business-friendly professors in colleges and universities all across the country. Lewis Powell then, the year after he wrote that memo, was put on the Supreme Court, and 6 years, 7 years later, on the Supreme Court, 1978, that's right, in the First National Bank versus Bilotti case, he actually wrote the decision legalizing political bribery by corporations. Lewis Powell himself. And, you know, the core of this entire thing was, if Americans trust government, then government will regulate us billionaires and us big toxic poison-producing corporations. And we can't have that, because that means our taxes go up and the regulations mean our profits go down. So we've got to destroy Americans' faith in government. Cue Ronald Reagan.
The nine most frightening words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Remember that? That was 76. And of course, 86. Boy, what a day for years. In any case, that was 1986. And in 1981, January 20th of 1981, when Reagan was sworn in, you know, he came right out and said it. He said, government is not the solution to your problems. Government is the problem. And now we have been subject to 50 years of this, well, 40 years of it in a big way, of being told that government is the problem, you can't trust government, government bureaucrats can't do anything right. Reagan's, you know, favorite, one of his favorite sayings, I've heard it literally 1,000 times repeated since Reagan said it from other people, is, you know, there are no good people in government. If there were smart people working for the government, they would leave the government and take a higher paid job in private industry. There's no good people. I mean, this is, you know, they're just ridiculing the idea of public service, ridiculing the idea that some people go into government work because they actually want to serve the rest of us, that they want to be of use to society and of value to society. The scientists that work at the Environmental Protection Agency or the Interior Department, that they're only, you know, the conservatives would have you believe that they're only there because they're dumb or they're incompetent, which is absolutely not the case. Some of the best scientists in the world work at the National Institutes of Health and the Centers for Disease Control, for example. Government jobs. But 40 years of this mantra has led us now to the point where we've got the governors of Florida and Texas saying, government is so terrible, we're not going to let local governments protect your children from a deadly virus. This is where, this is like the logical endpoint of this insane ideology. And now we've got an election coming up in 2022. And the billionaires and the transnational corporations are organizing their anti-democracy movements all over the world, and in particular here in the United States. And the question is whether Joe Biden and the Democrats in Congress can make it through. Right, they just passed this $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill. Well, they didn't pass the bill. They passed the naked framework for the bill out of the Senate. So that goes to the House. They do the same thing. And then they start filling in the blanks, right? And Joe Manchin comes out and goes, oh, we can't have this. Too much money. Inflation. But that's okay. You know, Greg Sargent has a great piece in the Washington Post today, and I think he's absolutely right. Manchin has to give, and Sinema, on the $3.5 trillion bill and vote for it, if in exchange for that, they want progressives in the House of Representatives and in the Senate, for that matter, to vote for their $1 trillion non-reconciliation bill that's got all kinds of Republican goodies jammed into it, like private-public partnerships, huge subsidies of for-profit corporations in the broadband industry, and not taking on the fossil fuel industry. All right, so if you want your fossil fuel friendly, big corporate friendly bill, $1 trillion bill passed, Joe Manchin, you're going to have to suck it up with the $3.5 trillion bill. And Bernie, if you want the $3.5 trillion bill, you're going to have to suck it up and go along with the $1 trillion bill that Joe Manchin did. It's a reasonable kind of middle ground. But Republicans are trying to blow the whole thing up because they don't believe in government. Why? Because they are wholly owned by these billionaires and these polluting corporations that see government as something that reduces their profits. And they frankly don't give a damn about protecting Americans or the world. Meanwhile, in Michigan, a writer is over it. I'll tell you about that after the break.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
17 minutes past the hour, back with another rant and your calls as we continue on the program today. And welcome back, Ernesto in Montgomery, Illinois. Hey, Ernesto, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
I'm having trouble with years, but other than that, I'm mixing up my years today. But anyhow, I'm good. I only got about 4 hours sleep last night. It probably has something to do with it. What's on your mind?
You're doing better than I am, then. I want to talk about Biden's.
I'm listening.
Okay, about Biden's 50%, he wants to have 50% electric cars sold by 2030.
Right.
I mean, this just goes to show what you just said earlier about, not offending or going against fossil fuel. It's just another give back to them, We didn't go halfway when World War II came along. Everything, all our industries were turned to produce for the war effort. This climate change thing is for real.
You're right.
We are literally on fire.
Yeah. I'm out here in the Pacific Northwest. I can tell you all about the nation being on fire. And I agree with you, Ernesto. My guess is that the bet that Biden is making, and I think it's probably a good bet, is that by saying we're going to push for 50% by 2030, and we're going to put into place new tailpipe emission standards and subsidies that will encourage people to buy electric cars, and we're going to build an electric car infrastructure to accommodate that, that what will happen is within 2 or 3 years, you're going to see people buying electric cars, telling their friends and neighbors about it, bragging about them. I don't know if you've driven an electric car, Ernesto, but they are amazing. I mean, they've got more pickup than the best muscle car out there. And, they're clean, and their garage doesn't smell like gasoline all the time. And it's just amazing. And I think that, after a couple of years, I mean, I'm people that you never thought of as being motivated by green are buying electric cars just because they're so cool. And I think it's going to work out. I get what you're saying, but I'm not particularly freaked out about it.
Well, after 15, after we get there, let's say we get there to 2030, there's still going to be gasoline. They're going to last another 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Which means everything gets phased out by 2040, 2045, which is, the whole goal is to phase out fossil fuels by 2050.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
we really need to do it by 2040, or even 2030. I mean, it needs to be much sooner, and I agree with your sentiment.
It'd be too late.
This should be all hands on deck. I don't want to be, it's just, We've got what we've got. Certainly, if I could sit down with Joe Biden, I'd say, you know, let's do it a little faster than that. In fact, let's do it a lot faster than that. But
I mean, if we could go $3.5 trillion, $3.5 trillion should be plenty to get it going.
I think it will be if they can get it passed. I mean, there's just a lot hanging on this. Ernesto, thank you for the call. It's 21 minutes past the hour. I'll be back with this brilliant Michigan rant and your calls right after this. Okay, welcome back. This is Susan J. Demas. I'm assuming it's pronounced Demas. I don't know Susan. She publishes her own website. SusanJDemas.com is the website, and she's also publishing this newsletter. It's called Inside Michigan Politics, her own publication. And she wrote a piece that was in MichiganAdvance.com that I think just captures the zeitgeist perfectly, you know, the spirit of the times. It crystallizes it. And it was just so brilliant. I want to give her complete credit for it and share little bits of it with you. She says, sane America has had enough. Those of us who have tried to do everything right have no more F's left to give. Anti-vaxxers, COVID conspiracy theorists, and right-wing politicians have made the pandemic far more hellacious than it ever needed to be. We've been lectured endlessly by pundits and attention seekers on social media that we mustn't ever make them feel bad about their awful choices, no matter how many public violent scenes they cause over health rules, heavily armed protests they organize to intimidate us, or how much the death's toll soars. Their feelings have been deemed more important than the health and well-being of our families. Nope, she says, knuckle draggers do not deserve veto power over our safety. And then she goes on, if you refuse to get vaccinated, and this goes double if you're someone with a platform to influence others, you are to blame for the fourth wave. You are the reason why more children are being hospitalized. So spare me your family values bloviation. You are why good people have done their part and gotten their shots are getting breakthrough cases. I'm tired of sugarcoating it. The 40% who can't bother to get jabbed are why life continues to be hell for the rest of us. Let's stop denying the obvious. She goes on to say that's also threatening our economic recovery. And like clockwork, grandstanding dimwits in the Michigan legislature are now debating Republican legislation outlawing vaccine passports. She is so right. Susan J. Demas. Susan J. Demas, Demas, I'm assuming, .com is her website. And I've got a new writer that I'm following. Writers got to stick together, right? And this is so real. I mean, it's like we are hearing constantly from white right-wing snowflakes that we are interfering with their freedom by asking people to wear masks. Really? I think George Takei said it just absolutely brilliantly this morning. You know, he said, if you're I'm paraphrasing from memory here. He said words to the effect of, if you're bragging about not being vaccinated, don't bother. That's like bragging about being a drunk driver. You're not a patriot, you're a menace. And he's absolutely right. And that's what we need to be saying to these fools. You're not a patriot, you are a menace. Here we go. Again, from the writing, the newsletter, this is for today's writing. RIGHTING.com, thewriting.com. The most effective, this is from InfoWars, the most highly educated Americans are also the most vaccine hesitant. It's a lie, of course. This one from Western Journal. Government and media need to stop lying about COVID. Today, when I hear a government representative telling me something, my default position is to assume that he is wrong. He could be intentionally lying because he craves more power, which is a rush for liberals who work for the government, or he may simply be incompetent. See, we're back to Reaganism again. Oh, the government. You can't trust the government. Front page. Dems and COVID restrictions forever. Thanks to Big Mother, members of Congress have to have a face mask. Followed by an impeached Joe Biden. Yes, let's impeach him for trying to protect us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Susan is over it. I'm over it. I think we're all over it. Enough already with these fools about masks and vaccines. It's time to stay healthy. Okay, boy, what? There's so much going on, so much in the news, and it is like just whiplash. Ted Cruz single-handedly in the United States Senate, I mean, what is wrong with this, right? Ted Cruz single-handedly blocked even a discussion about the For the People Act that would, you know, help guarantee the people have the right to vote. These people don't like democracy. They don't want democracy. They want oligarchy. They want the billionaires who own them to be the only power in this country. They do not. They hate and fear we the people. It's just that simple. Anyhow, picking up your phone calls, Steve in Los Angeles. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom. What you say is 100% correct. It's clearly a class war. It's always has been a class war. Anyone who's read Chomsky knows already that the important thing is that the government is in the way of big businesses' ability to totally control everything.
Yep.
Only the government is big enough and powerful enough to counter them. So yep. By controlling the government or minimizing the government, it clears the field for them to do what they want to do. My problem with all of this is why the Democrats, which is supposed to be the party of the working man, party of the poor, why haven't they countered this? Why have they allowed this to go on for 40 or 50 years, like you say? We're basically unrepresented. Yeah. As long as the Democrats are run by these
by the same forces, the same people. Here's what happened, Steve. You know, Reagan became the champion for this in 1980, and at that point in time, you know, Jimmy Carter was flirting with neoliberalism, but by and large, the Democratic Party was still the party of organized labor. A third of America had good union jobs, and that was the principal source of funding for the Democratic Party. 8 years later, or really 12 years later, by the end of the Reagan and Bush administrations, union membership in America had gone from about a third down to around 10%, 10 or 11%. It had collapsed. And along with it had collapsed the funding for the Democratic Party. At the same time, the oil shock had worn off by 1982. We had 11.5% inflation in 1981, and it was down to 3% in 1982. Now, the reason for that was because the Arab oil embargo of 1973-74, that is what produced that 8 years of inflation. And by that time, by 82, it had kind of wrung itself out of the economy. But Reagan got the credit for that. And so all these neoliberal policies of free trade and gutting unions and ending welfare as we know it and tough on crime policing, all those you know, Republican and neoliberal policies were actually very popular in the late 80s. And so when Bill Clinton came along in 92, he just adopted them. The Democratic Party got in bed basically with the same billionaires, not necessarily the same, because the Democrats wanted to be with clean industry like tech, you know, and banking and insurance, and leave the poison industries, you know, steel and chemicals and pesticides and weapons manufacturing, leave that to the Republicans. That was the equation that they made in the 90s. So, you know, we had a decade and a half or so, or two decades, where the Democratic Party was as tightly embracing neoliberalism as were the Republicans. And Joe Biden is the first Democratic president since Jimmy Carter to reject neoliberalism. And so we're in the process, the Democratic Party, of walking back from that poison, you know, not drinking that poison anymore, not drinking that Kool-Aid anymore. But we still have people like, you know, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema who are there, who are taking money from the same people.
Right, they're holdovers, but that is the only chance we have is for people. I mean, Biden is basically a moderate himself, but hopefully he's seen the importance of giving the progressives more power, because that's really the only thing that can combat the corporatists and the big business. And the Republicans have always been more organized, better organized, and they're great at executing their plans, because they're desperate. They need to be. They know they're a minority, and they know they need to be better. The Democrats need to counter that and put their numbers to work, because that's what our advantage is. We have more people than they do. I agree.
And I think that the other advantage Republicans have is that the Republican Party, as is the case with conservative parties all over the world, is more attractive to people who are authoritarian followers, which is about 20% of any population. People just they are perfectly willing. In fact, they're anxious to surrender their personal will and power to an authority figure. And that's why the old saying, Republicans fall, Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line. And
Democrats need better PR.
I'm with you. Steve, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. You said it very, very well. Mike in Athens, Texas. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, what's up, brother? How's it going?
Good. What's on your mind?
Nothing much, man. Hey, so I was trying to basically, I'm on the fence about the whole vaccine situation, and I've had both variants, the regular coronavirus and also the Delta. The first time, it was just almost like a sinus congestion. Once I got over that in about 10 days, didn't lose taste, didn't lose any of my smell, but had to wait the whole period before returning to work and that type of stuff. But the second time when I caught the Delta, very minimal side effects other than almost like a common cold once again. So I guess my question being, so I'm on the fence about why I need to take the vaccine based on my antibodies that I got naturally. What other reason is there for me to take the vaccine and other people to take the vaccine that already have the antibodies? And why is there no talk or comparison of the people that actually have antibodies the natural way, and how effective that is versus the vaccine?
Yeah. If everything you're telling me is true, Mike, and I'm skeptical, but about half of the people who get COVID, even about half of the people who get Delta COVID, are not ending up in the hospitals. But by and large, people with Delta COVID are reporting that it's worse than any flu they've ever had in their lives, and they just feel like they want to die. The people who don't end up in the hospital. But in any case, it's a legitimate question. I would submit to you that apparently the reason that you got the Delta infection was because the original COVID did not give you enough immunity to deal with a variant. And this is what Anthony Fauci said when Rand Paul came out and said, well, I already got COVID. I don't need a shot. And Anthony Fauci said, you certainly do, you idiot. Having had COVID is not going to protect you from the Delta variant. And sure enough, Mike, you're telling me that that's very much the case. Well, coming along behind the Delta variant is the Lambda variant, and then is the Mu variant or whatever. I mean, there's a bunch of them, coming down the road. And this vaccine technology clearly triggers an antibody response that's much stronger than the one that you get from just having the disease. And so there's virtually no side effects, other than, hey, my arm got sore for a day, or I felt like I had a mild cold. And frankly, the more serious the side effect, probably the more serious the infection would have been, although that's, speculation. But I would say that that's why you need to get a vaccine. Even if you've had COVID, even if you've had COVID and Delta, I would still get a vaccine. Arthur in Chicago. Hey, Arthur, what's on your mind?
What's on my mind is, Tom, and I hope you have, hope you're having a good day. I'm having a pretty good one. What Susan said was right spot on. I'm going to get to my point. In California, they're talking about recalling Governor Newsom.
Right.
Which I think is so ludicrous. It's the Republican, probably-based antics.
There's a reason for this, too, Arthur. The reason is Dianne Feinstein, who's 88 years old. And if anything happens to her, she gets replaced by the governor. If they can put a Republican in that governor's seat, and, that's probably the main reason why they're focused on this.
Okay, now I understand more fully. I didn't realize she's that old.
Yep.
I know she was up there, but
she's pushing 90,
wow.
And she's losing it. I'll just say that right up front. I think she should have resigned. I think she should resign today.
I think there's a lot of them in Washington, D.C. that need to resign that are losing it or have already lost it. But my question is, Tom, if you know anything about this, in Florida and in Texas, why aren't there Democrats? Why aren't there people who are grieving for the loss of their loved ones because of misinformation and the continual misinformation by these governors? Why isn't there a recall? What is the recall process in those states to put some heat under these guys instead of letting them just talk all this nonsense every time?
That's a damn good question, Arthur. I don't know the answer to that. The California recall process, of course, we're all familiar with because we saw it with Gray Davis. That's how we got Arnold Schwarzenegger, which, again, was pushing out a Democrat and bringing in a Republican. And they did it the same way that they're expecting to do this one with Gavin Newsom, which is that, you know, the recall election is a special election. So only the really animated partisans will show up, you know, which and the most recent polling shows that Newsom probably will be recalled just because not because the majority of Californians want him out, but because the majority of Californians are not going to bother showing up for a special election that only, you know, foaming at the mouth Republicans care about. But what the system is for initiating a recall in Texas and Florida, I don't know. That would depend on the state constitution and the state laws. But you raise a fascinating question. And hopefully somebody who lives in Florida or Texas or somebody who knows the laws of those states, and my apologies, Arthur, that I don't, will call in and inform us. And if not, at the end of the day today, when I get off the air, I'll look it up and I'll report back to you tomorrow. Arthur, thank you. That was a brilliant question. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
46 minutes past the hour. Back with more of your calls in just a moment. And welcome back. Timothy in East Berkshire, Vermont. Hey, Timothy, what's up?
Hello, Tom. So, here's the newest buzz phrase that I've heard regarding the anti-vaxxer people. And, of course, I'm in Vermont, and you've lived in Vermont, yada, yada.
Yeah, 10 years.
By the way, they're closing Charlie O's again because it's blown up down there. But I
in Montpelier?
To the point.
The bar?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, right. And I'm a musician, and our band is beginning to say, you know what? If there isn't a vaccine mandate or at least a mask mandate, we don't want to play the gig. But here's the buzz phrase. Spread necks.
I'm sorry?
I said the buzz phrase that I'm hearing around here, they're called spread necks.
Spread necks.
Are
you talking about ectomorphs? Big bulky people?
Yeah, spread necks. They're spread necks. Yeah. They're rednecks who don't get vaccinated.
Oh, because they're spreading the virus. I was thinking spread as in big neck. Why are you picking on people who are born, you know, genetically large? It's like, I get it now. Spreading the virus, right. Spread necks. So, that's funny.
But there's another bar in Burlington, and I know I'm talking regional terms. A lot of folks don't get this. But it's the busiest bar per square foot in the state. It's called Three Needs in Burlington. And they now are mandating that customers have to show proof of vaccination in order to get in the bar. And I think they're going to establish precedent where other restaurants and bars are going to follow suit.
Well, individual private businesses have a lot of latitude in this regard. You know, they can choose not to serve people who are not wearing shoes. They can choose to serve not to serve people who are not wearing shirts. I mean, those are well established. There are some restaurants that have dress codes. You can't get in unless you're wearing a sports coat or wearing a tie. So what's the deal? I mean, prove that you're vaccinated or prove that or at least wear a mask.
Right. Absolutely. You got your ID, you take a screenshot with your phone.
Yep.
Bada bing, bada boom, you're good to go.
Yeah. Have you played in this bar? Have you seen it at work? Are they getting a lot of blowback from people, or are people real happy with it? Do you have any sense of that, Timothy?
Well, yes, I do. And, like, for instance, I know, and I hate to talk in such regional terms, but I know you know what I'm talking about. But like Charlie O's, for instance, they're spreadnecks.
Yeah, well, and, Charlie O's was always kind of the redneck, you know, biker country bar in Montpelier.
It still is. Yeah. Actually, I met my second ex-wife there when I was playing a gig a while back. But Three Needs, I guess we're going to get a gig there. And like I said, you cannot go in that establishment unless you show proof of vaccination.
Yeah. Well, let me know how it works out, Timothy. That's great. I'm glad to hear that it's happening in my old town. Louise and I lived in Montpelier for 5 years and in Northfield for 5 years, and we love Vermont. Thank you very much for the call. In fact, we started this show in Vermont, in our living room in Montpelier. We'll be right back. Timothy, thank you for the call. We'll be right back. It's coming up on 10 minutes before the hour. Back in 1 minute. And welcome back, Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind today?
Hey, not too much, Tom. Hey, I want to give you my take on conservatives and their love of destroying government. And I'll try to make it quick, but it's complicated, okay?
You must make it quick.
Yes, I will. Bill Kristol said that Trumpers and the conservative movement are the hippies of the conservative movement. And another thing George Will said, he said that Republican politicians not only fear their voters, they don't like them. Now, all of that seems counterintuitive, but not if you think about something I said one time. I said that the Magna Carta is the same as critical race theory. Why did I say that? Well, the Magna Carta is considered a great document now, but back then they hated it. There were British nobles that were used to a feudal system. They were like, what? My all the rights come from me. That's why when Donald Trump was president, they kept saying that so-and-so serves at the pleasure of the president. Look, democracy and representative government have not worked for George Will and the billionaire Republicans. It has not worked for the poor ones. So what they're trying to do is mix patriarchy, feudalism, and actually patriarchy, feudalism, and the other one's... But bottom line is they're all reverting back to that, but it's not going to work. The lords of the manor are going to be fascist. And the reason why I say that is because they're trying to align everything instead of a bloodline. They're trying to align it with corporate interests, tribe, the tribalism. The tribe is corporate.
Right. And they always have been. I mean, you know, this has always been the case. Dave, thank you. Jeff in Spanaway, Washington. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, I just wanted to tell you, I was so proud. I talked to my kid here, and I'm an proud IBEW member. Mm-hmm. My boy just got he's been in the Boilermaker Union now for a little bit. And one thing he said was, to me, we were talking, and a lot of your talking points, he says, we have separation of church and state in the Constitution. Shouldn't we have the separation of, sounds like we should have the separation of corporation and state.
There were a number of founders who actually argued for that.
They used to call it bribery, right?
Yes, exactly. And now it's called free speech, corporate free speech. Your kid is brilliant, Jeff.
I know it. I love him. Oh, okay. Hey, and I love your show. Take care, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the call. Mike in Bailey, Colorado. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom, real quick. Mesa County, Colorado, our Secretary of State has reported that their passwords for their voting machines have been posted on a conservative website.
I know.
And they don't know if it's inside job or if they got hacked, but they are investigating it. And another thing, a friend of mine just let me know his 27-year-old son died from this damn COVID.
Oh, man. That is so unfortunate. I'm so sorry to hear that. Yeah,
this stuff's touching us all. I'm sorry, it is.
Yeah, this is a terrible, terrible disease. Mike, thanks a lot for that, and thanks for the update on Colorado. I've been following that story, and it's going to be real interesting to see what they're going to have to do about that. Presumably, they're just going to change the passwords. But
it's going to give the Repubs here another swing at going after the Dominion voting machines. They're already, I can see it ramping up right now.
Yeah. Well, that was what precipitated it. Was there was some Republican who was some conspiracy nut who was going on and on about this, and the screenshot of what they did, as I recall, included because it was they were on the tabulator computer, if I'm remembering correctly, and the screenshot had the password on it, and that. Mm-hmm. And that was the point at which, and the screenshot was purported to prove how easy it is to hack these machines and get into which it didn't do at all. I mean, they didn't succeed in making their point, but they did succeed in putting the password out for the world. And it's just like the crazy people in Arizona. I mean, it's nuts that the state Senate required Maricopa County to turn over the voting machines to this cyber ninja guy, this one guy who's got this little company that operates out of a post office box in Florida, and now they can't use those machines anymore.
Hey, look at Ivanka Trump's patents in China. One was for voting machines.
I know. Actually, more than one was for voting machines. Yes, you're right, which is very strange. Very strange.
Yeah.
Mike, thank you for the call. We're hitting the top of the hour here. We will be back on the other side of this. We're going to check in with Michael Mann about climate change. What's going on? Code Red for the world. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.